I'm from the University of Twente, which is a small university, about 6,000 students we have at the eastern border of the Netherlands. And yeah, document space, I think I'll just dive directly into a little bit of math, not too much, and just, well, let's see what happens. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to briefly touch upon some things that we've done in the past. I'm a computer scientist, so I will put on some math, but I'm also very interested in, does it work, right? So show a little bit of that. And I'm not really going to explain information retrievals. I assume you all use Google, and well, that's more or less what I'm going to do anyway. So you type a query, and maybe some intelligence processing, and up comes a list of documents. And then in the second part, and it depends a bit on how long this takes, I'm going to do some weird stuff, which is actually also kind of new for me. I did my PhD in a language technology group, so language models was okay. And here I'm actually going to talk a little bit about building systems and about query languages. Okay, so we've seen this. For instance, on your slides, thank you. So there was an input, which was a speech, some sound wave. Right, let's see. Actually, we assume there is a noisy channel and out comes some kind of speech wave, and we want to know what was the input. The input was a text, which is typically done like this. We've all seen this. And it might be interesting just to fill in sort of the IR case here. So you could imagine there is a noisy channel that eats a document and out comes a query. So this is like your summarization system. It's a perfect summarization system. You throw in a large document and out comes in a few words what this document is about. And of course, when we build a retrieval system, we want to do the opposite. So the user gives us a brief summarization of what he wants. Very brief, usually only a few keywords, like 3, 2, 4. And we want to know what's the most probable document that generated this query, this particular query. So we want to know the probability that a particular document is relevant given a small query. And as in the previous slide, we will typically do that by making a model of, given the document, what's the probability of some words, sequence of words, and we have a document prior, which I will use later on in the presentation. So one way to think of these language models, and one way I like a lot is that you take a document. This is a document. And you can imagine that you close your eyes and you point at the document, and now I point at a word, which is useful. How useful would you find this word? And of course, the probability that I point to useful is maybe high for this document because it talks about useful all the time. Is that correct? Yeah. Number of times about useful. Useful in connection with the program. But if I take another document, maybe a Newswire document, the probability of useful will be much less. So I can do it with whole queries. I can put the document back and do this another time, close my eyes again, point that at some other random position. And I can come up with, for every document, the probability that I, by accident, point at document, space, and 2006. And that probability will be very small for every document, but it will be quite high for the, for instance, the web page of this workshop. And a good indication that that web page is the one that you want to return if someone types this query in, well, in a web search engine. So you could compute this probability for every document and then rank the documents according to this probability. So what we typically do is to take simple unigram models, so we just assume independence between pointing at the words, if you like. typically take a linear combination of this is the document model and some background model. The reason for that is that, well, documents are very, very small, and there is, if you type in a query of a certain length, there is a big chance that none of the documents will have all your query terms, and in that case, every document will have zero probability. So we back off to, if you like, a model of general English. Maybe it's a model of general query English, which might be different from normal English. And this will basically assign me a non-zero probability to every document in the collection. And this sort of summarizes, so this is the document model. This is what I call the background model. And this is some probability, which we don't know. We have to sort of set to something. And these document and background probabilities, they are just estimated. The way you think they are. So this is the TF, it's the term frequency, how many times does the word occur in the document, and this is the document length. And this thing is, it's actually all those TFs summed over all documents. So this is what I call the collection frequency, how often does the word occur in the whole collection, divided by the collection length. Right.
Why would you want to back off?
Yeah, so if you build a search engine like Google, you might not want to back off. In that case, that's what Google does as well. If you type in a long query and no document matches all of the query terms, the system will just say, "I'm sorry, no match is found. Please rephrase your query." The main reason that we want to do this is A, it's very similar to what we've seen. If you I'll make a connection with like vector space approaches in a minute. And also, yeah, we participated in many of these evaluation things, and there it really hurts if you don't give any results back. So if you participate in track, for instance, you have all kinds of queries, and if you don't give anything back, you'll basically get zero score. So it's best to always give something back. And if that something has very low probability, you probably do not find anything useful. It's even better to give random stuff back. Mm-hmm. So that's what we do. Yeah.
Graduate students know that from like oral exams.
Yeah. It's better to show up and just fill in random stuff. Mm-hmm. And then you have to do the corrections. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is the case for in Track as well, because they have these assessors which are going to look at your documents. We occasionally we have had it that we send in a run with a bug, like an indexing error. I had a colleague who sent in the you have to send in 1,000 documents, and he did lots of coding, and he made one of these errors that you made while coding, right? You do a sum of I is 1 to something. Or was it 0 to something? And he made a mistake and sent in the 1,000 documents until the number 2,000, so basically garbage. Mm-hmm. And then all the assessors have to read the documents.
Yeah.
They are retired CIA agents, they've done this all their lives. So how to estimate this lambda? Well, you could train it on some previously seen queries for which we know what the relevant documents are, for instance by doing an EM. But basically what we normally do is just pick some lambda, 0.5, 0.0. Usually for these track evaluations, it seems that a smaller lambda is actually doing a little bit better. So I always found it strange that you should put in lots of this background. So I think it's an indication that people write bad queries.
So the EM, what's it come up with lambda? I
think the EM would also come up with like lambda of 0.3, 0.2.
Okay, and that's the percentage of background again. I always forget which way it goes.
Would give you a 20% foreground document model and 80% background.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Which is amazing. So so the EM algorithm would say like roughly 80%.
Yeah,
in 80% of the relevant documents, Well, if you have three query terms and a number of relevant documents, 80% of the time the word does not occur.
Huh.
So people write bad queries. Or there are many, many documents that are relevant that do not contain a lot of query terms. So IR is a hard problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's good to know that for extreme values, if you take lambda 0, then you only have a background model.
I might have another explanation for why this lambda might be big. The reason is that when you do corpus-wide estimation, you get like a fairly small probability for any given word, right? And then what is this doing? This is saying that, let's say I give you three query terms, and two of them are in the document and one of them is not.
Mm-hmm.
And then I want to make this in the same ballpark as another document which contains all three query terms.
Yeah.
Because one has three, the other has two, so it shouldn't be too far behind.
Yeah, maybe you're
so
right.
So now, for that missing probability, if you just interpolate it with its corpus probability, it's a minuscule number.
Yeah.
So to make the two sort of start being comparable, you need to multiply the, because the per document probabilities of words are based on 1,000 in the denominator. So they're much bigger numbers.
Yeah.
Just
that's
in terms of the dynamic range.
That's a good explanation as well. Although, it's a bit strange, and maybe one reason. So it's good to know that if you take lambda as one, you're only retrieving what we said before.
Yeah.
We're only retrieving documents that contain all the terms, and it's not very hard to prove that in the limit. If lambda is close enough to one, documents that contain all the terms are always ranked above documents that contain less query terms, which seems reasonable. If you take lambda like 0.2, that will not always happen.
Yes,
which is a bit strange. And I also, as a user, find that strange. I type in three query terms, and the top document has two of them. And then I go down the list, and there is a document below that has all three of them.
Mm-hmm.
I will not trust that system, actually. What's happening? Turns out that if you do that, you get somewhat better average precision results.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's a good suggestion. That might also be. That, anyway, that's stuff that's going on here.
I think Google does that a little bit. I mean, heuristically, I've had queries come back from Google where one uncommon term and one common term that ranks a bunch of stuff with just the common term and no uncommon term.
Right.
And I can never figure out why I did that.
Well, the deal is that there's different users. I mean, if you have users who write good queries, you'd want a different lambda than if you have other people. So presumably, I was going to go the other way. I was going to say Google Scholar might want to have a different lambda than the regular Google because they're going to take more care for their queries, perhaps.
Yeah. Lots of this is in the semantics as well, right? If I say I want a nice and good computer, I probably would prefer documents that only have computer over documents that have nice and good whatever stuff.
Right.
So, yeah. So when we first came up with this, I was working with Bessel Kraai from TNO, and they had this vector space engine, and he said, well, that's very nice, but I cannot really do this in my vector space engine. So, well, you can, yes, you can.
Actually, I don't know what a vector space engine for this problem might be.
Yeah, right. So,
okay.
So basically,
good.
Sorry. What he needs is, he said, what I need is this. I want to have a vector product.
Yeah.
And I cannot really do linear interpolations or probabilities. And so he said, whatever you do, I don't care, but you have to come up with something that's
like
that. and it's not very hard to show that you can divide this whole thing by the product of this 1 minus lambda in the background. And that product does not depend on the document.
Mm-hmm.
There's no document in here. So that will give me here 1 minus lambda times the background divided by 1 minus lambda times the background. And here it will give me basically this thing. So I get 1 plus, well, lambda times the document model divided by 1 minus lambda times the background model, which still has, well, and then we can remove the product by taking the sum of logs, which also will not change the ranking of the documents. And then as a final step, I could use the query term frequency. If suppose you repeat some query terms in your queries, very unlikely that you do that for a web storage, but maybe for some other sorry, for some other applications. And then you end up with something like this. So there is a vector product of here, just a simple TF model, and here is something more complicated. But this something more complicated is actually what? It's like meeting old friends, because this is the TF. Mm-hmm. This is the, you have lots of these TF IDM weighting algorithms. This is sort of the something similar to this document frequency. This is how often does the term occur in a document. And this is the document length. And if you take these three, you also have something that's very similar to this mutual information that some people have used in some of their presentations. The difference is that I have this plus one here, which does make a difference.
Yeah,
it makes it more continuous, I think, how do you say this? Well, this is basically a very big number. It's the size of the corpus that goes in here, but it's a constant. And this is basically also a constant. So one thing to notice here if you call this document space, that the meshing is definitely not symmetric. So a query is mapped very different into the space than the document.
Mm-hmm.
And if you take this analogy of sampling terms from a document, then the probability of, suppose that these are two different documents. Probability of sampling this document from this document might be different from the other way around. So if I have a document that discusses, for instance, the science document that discusses the effects of El Nino on some organism, it will have like two topics. Basically, it has like weather, and it has, climate or something. And it will have the topic ecosystem or whatever, biology. And if I have just a document that covers one of these topics, I could fairly good generate that document from the two topic document. But the other way around, if this document only discusses the weather stuff, it's very unlikely that I get the biology stuff if I go the other way around. So this symmetry has some good things in there. And it means if you do all of this clustering stuff, you might want to take that into account. I don't really know how. Maybe like this. Okay. So how does this work? This is some stuff that I did a couple of years ago on one of these text retrieval conference collections. I think it has a LA Times, Financial Times, and I don't know, some other stuff, Federal Register document. This is this language modeling thing that really does very well on that. And the top one, it's the original TF-IDF with cosine suggested by Salton in the 70s. And some of the people said, I don't really mind. I take whatever similarity measure you like, for instance, the stuff that Salton did. But that's really...
low tech.
This is really more than 100% better. This is really a major, major difference.
So what the other systems are there?
This is sort of a knife-based classifier system, which was proposed, for instance, by Robinson Spark Jones in 70-something.
Is that not Okapi, or is it?
This one is the Okapi version.
Okapi.
And actually, this is not really significant anymore.
But I understand your system. I don't understand Okapi still.
Oh, okay. They claim it's based on some 2 plus L model, but it's actually also some lots of heuristics in there.
Yeah.
This one is actually one of the last weighting algorithms suggested by people from Salton's group. I think this one was done by Amit Singhal, who's now at Google.
Mm-hmm.
And already there, I don't remember what the letters are, but this is how the documents are mapped into the space, and this is how the queries are mapped this way. So already there, they
mm-hmm.
gave up on the symmetry thing.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever you do, this similarity function is the single most important thing in these systems. This is the most important thing, and all the stuff you do later. will very much depend on how you define your similarity.
This was a, this was an ad hoc retrieval, as they call it, or something. Or
yeah.
What, you know, what year is this, or what?
This is, I think this is what, this was my second test retrieval conference in 1998. And well, you basically have just an ad hoc search. You have queries, and what are the best documents? So actually, when I did my PhD, the main my mission was to do cross language search, and this is just cross language search in the translated in some languages. So the mission there was, you enter a query, for instance, in Dutch, because my Dutch query writing abilities are better than English. But I very much like English documents, and I can read some German documents and also some French documents. And I really don't want to type in queries in all those languages. And even if I would do that, I would get like four windows with blank documents. That's hard to manage. So we enter a query in one language, and we retrieve a bunch of documents in other languages, and also in the same language maybe. And the system somehow takes care of automatic translation. And the funny thing of this, if you take this noisy channel paradigm again, the funny thing is you can just glue some channels after each other. So you can have a document, I sample a query, let's say this is an English document, so I will get an English query. Then I have another channel that corrupts English into Dutch. Well, I'm not sure.
Corrupts is the right word.
That's the right word, right? Yeah, yeah. So like Dutch is actually like corrupted English. I've seen some people that did this actually for French. I think it was a group of Cornell who did this for French English. So they just took a spelling corrector algorithm, and they throw a French query through the spellings corrected. And up comes some suggestions for English words. And it worked quite okay. So we took a little bit more intelligent approach to this channel. We estimated translation models from parallel corpora. We also included dictionaries that we have, and we basically sort of, well, anything we get our hands on. Anyway, if you do this, then you really want to know what's the probability that the English document is relevant given the Dutch query, and you should somehow sum over all of these English terms. The notation is a bit weird, but you sum over all the possible English translations. So you could say that the translation of a term does not depend on the document in which it occurs if you do this. So you could say, if you know that a term is coming from a document on a certain topic, that might change the probability distribution on the possible translations. Here, the translation does not really have anything to do with the document it comes from. This is some notation. So the S is, let's say, a Dutch query, and the T's are possible English translations. And if you glue that together, it's not very hard to see that you get something like this. This is our old model, and then there are some translation probabilities, and a big sum over that, and this is the product over all the original query terms. That makes sense. Yeah, so how does this work in practice? So this is something that we could not no longer do in the vector product engine. So basically, Wessel and I had to go to the code. In this case, we had a system that was implemented at TNO in C. So we had to go into the code, and we implemented something that we called grouping at that time. So basically, I'll get to that actually. So how does this work in practice? Why is that an M? For every desk query term, MI, which was an S.
You had an S there, yeah.
anime from Netherlands. I don't know. So for every query term, the Dutch query term, we have a couple of English terms and their translation probabilities, and we combine them in a structured query, and we process the query. So that's how we did this. So basically, we implemented something that we called grouping, and we changed the query language in which we could say, like, oh, these words belong together. They are possible translations of the query term, and these long words belong together. So if you have a Dutch query, which is broken heart, which, of course, means broken heart. Don't ask me why I took this query term. Then you might find several possible translations of the word gebroken, which might be broken or fractured. And these are translation probabilities, and they basically are, if you see the word broken, what is the probability that it translates to gebroken?
Mm-hmm.
Which might be 1.0, I just made these figures up, and 0.2 for fractured. You might also do that for heart. You get a heart or a ticker, I don't know, someone told me this. Never heard of that. Yeah, it makes sense. And this is what we would give our...
See the Wizard of Oz.
Okay.
Yeah, check the Wizard of Oz.
Okay, oh, I will, yeah. Actually, I like that. I don't remember.
No, in the movie, at least.
Yeah?
I don't know about the
okay.
book.
So this is what we would give our system. And this might actually say or, and this might say and or something, or a comma, and I don't really remember. We had several versions of this. And then we would process it. And we would do this probability function that we showed before. And here are some results on this particular task of, we had a English track top corpus, we translated all the, we asked someone to translate the queries to Dutch, and then we sort of saw how we could do on this task. So if I won't explain all of these algorithms. We had one that sort of tried to do word sense evaluation and pick the right English translation, and that came up to about 70%.
Sorry, and that's looking at the word in the context of the whole query?
Yeah.
But you weren't going backwards. You weren't taking the words in English and disambiguating them.
I think actually what the best automatic disambiguation was, it, sorry, what was your question? Yeah.
Well, so you have the document, you know, you have, let's say, broken, and in the document you have fractured, and you disambiguate there what fractured meant.
Yeah, you would hope that would happen, yeah.
And
so you just find
that
the
would
query.
Seem better.
Yeah.
I mean it's slower, but it would seem like more likely to work because the query potentially is
yeah,
too
so
short.
Well, actually what we did is, if you just do the translation model and you don't do any disambiguation, you just fire it up to the system, then you could say that happens. So in this case, the language modeling structured query thing, that's what we showed, this is the last line, gives you 83%, so you don't really have to do with that sense of disambiguation, you should just fire all the words to the system.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, some of these possible translations improve, because you get sort of synonyms for free. And that is also shown here, because here we did not do the structuring at all, we just threw in the words in the query. We did normalize them somehow, so if one Dutch word had like 10 possible English translations, we divided the probabilities of the weights of those words by 10. And this already gives you this already is as good as asking a human to manually disambiguate our machine translated query. So here we gave a human translator the structured queries that I showed, and the person said, this is the word I would pick.
Mm-hmm.
This is the word I would pick. So, in the meantime, you can do this and get up over 100% of the baseline English. So people from BBN Technologies have done this for several of these cross-language tracks, and they've pushed this until basically there's no difference in cross-language search and just English search.
Oh,
Be- Because you get a better representation of your queries somehow. If you
let me ask you something. So the way you described this, you said that you had an English document collection and you had English queries on it.
Yeah.
And if you run English queries on English documents, you get a certain average precision, which was on your previous slide somewhere, maybe.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter.
Yeah,
it's just somewhere.
Put it
here,
yeah. Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a number. Let's say it's.
That's 100%.
And that would count as 100% performance.
Yeah.
So now you had translate these English queries into Dutch queries.
Mm-hmm.
And so now the first line says, take this Dutch query, take some translation resource, whatever it might be, and each word might have multiple English translations. Use some automatic technique to disambiguate which of those translations might be the right one. And so if you had a three-word Dutch query, you'll convert it to a three-word English query.
Right.
And that's the first line.
That's the first line. Yeah.
Now, the second line is that instead of having an automatic way of picking a three-word English query, you ask a human to pick a three-word English query.
Yeah.
Now, is their choice limited to what your translation resource can offer you?
Yeah.
Because otherwise, I would expect that second line also to be 100%.
It should be.
It's always translated back to what the English word.
No, the human manual disambiguation algorithm or person had to pick one of the possible translations from our machine translation system.
Right.
So if that did not produce the right translation in its list, then...
So somehow 22% is a failure of your translation resource, with 78 to 100.
Yeah. Okay.
And what you're saying is that these translation model, the structured query where you say, let's throw in all possible translations, even though the best one is the correct one, quote unquote.
The correct one is not there.
This still helps you recover from not having the correct one.
Right. Yeah.
So when you do what you're doing, you're inadvertently, as it were, you're certainly including synonyms for a given English word. So what if, I mean, if you could have the strategy that give me an English query, I'm going to also use synonyms, and then I'm going to do my search. And what you're in effect doing is something like that, because you're including synonyms, which helps.
Yeah.
So it seems to me those two factors are kind of mixed together. I'd like to see what the best performance is, something that made use of synonyms.
Yeah, that would be very interesting. And that I did this a long time ago, and at that time it was on my to-do list. For instance, let's translate to Dutch to English and translate let's translate English to Dutch and Dutch directly back to English. That would give me lots of synonyms, and then see how that works. And we never did that. So
I guess one comparison to satisfy Mark would be to compare not with the English baseline as you have, but with the English baseline that does query expansion.
Yeah, that's right. And that's well known that you can, with this, the English baseline was maybe kind of naive in that sense. You could do like all kinds of stuff to improve that as well. And that would make it harder, of course, to beat the baseline. Yeah. We did not do that, but other people have, I'm sure. Yeah. Okay. So one more thing is this prior, and this prior is very important for web search, for instance. For instance, this Google PageRank thing, and it very nicely fits here. So this Google PageRank thing is this random server, and it will give you sort of a probability of, if you put out 1,000 random server monkeys on the internet, what's the probability of how many monkeys are at my page at a certain time? One thing just to check all of this, we found out that if you do these track collections, this newswire stuff on the newspapers, then the longer the document is, the higher the probability is developed, which probably makes sense. So if you, without even knowing the query, I could do a little bit better than random and just give all the big documents to the user. Now that's what we did here. We had a number of queries, I think 50, and we took all the relevant documents of those. We threw away the queries again, and then we bid the documents by their length. So this is documents from 10 to 50. these documents from 50 to maybe 70 length in words. And this is the probability that from those sets you find a relevant one if you just randomly pick a document from those sets. So you see that, well, the bigger the document, the higher the probability of relevance. And from this graph you might just say, oh, instead of actually using the probabilities from the bins, I just assume that the probability of relevance is proportional to the document length. I can even forget that the C doesn't really matter for the ranking anyway. So for web search, if you want to find home pages, you might look at document length. You might also look at something like Google, like how many other pages are pointing to this page. We also looked at the depth of the URL, which is a very simple and very powerful thing. If you want to have a home page, then the shorter the URL, the higher is the probability that's a home page. Very simple. So this is a document length on a web corpus, so that doesn't work there, obviously. Well, there's some difference. Maybe you could sort of optimize on documents that are around 100 words, that are most likely to be home pages. But doesn't really look good. I think I'll go a little bit faster now because I'm only halfway.
You could do some naive bids there as well, right? So you could say, given the document, what's the probability? Given that it's the document, what's the probability of the document times probability that these features appear in the document?
Yeah.
If it's the document, you want times the probability of the query given the document.
Actually, we did that. So you could take all those features and estimate a naive Bayes classifier.
Yeah, but so not just length, but also.
We did not have lots of points. So these are relevant documents of 50 queries. So it's if you put in lots of features, then the classifier has too many options.
Okay.
So anyway, this is if you. This is not good. This is number of inlinks. It says document length. Sorry about that. Copy and paste mistake. So this is the number of links pointing to a document, and this is again the probability relevance. And here you see that it just works quite well. Actually, we have also implemented Google PageRank, and that worked worse than this. And at that time, I was a bit worried that I had made a bug in the system. But and we did not really publish that. But I've seen other papers where they also found it. So. You can do this in complicated Google PageRank, but you might as well just take a probability that's proportional to the number of links pointing at a document. That works as well for these
types. The number of links.
This is the number of.
Links pointing in. That's a typo.
Oh, this is a typo. This is links pointing to the document.
Okay.
So here we would have about 10,000 links pointing to some documents. There are some web pages. This is a 10 gigabytes, very small web corpus actually, but there are still pages in there that have 10,000 links pointing down.
It's a crude approximation to PageRank, but
it's
obviously
crude,
but it's obviously better.
It's better or it's good.
Yeah.
And you can do this in a second, and PageRank will take you a while.
Yeah. Well, it's sort of almost one step of the iteration.
The first step.
Yeah, that's what you're doing. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a way of explaining it.
Yeah.
Other context, but not that PageRank is sacred.
This graph is suggesting a power law rather than a linearity.
Sorry?
This seems like it's suggesting a power law rather than a linearity.
Both axes actually are logarithmic, but this I think I can. This looks like a straight line to me, but maybe not. Maybe
it's 45 degrees.
Maybe it goes actually like this, but we don't really have documents.
I'm against the marking with you. That's a straight line.
If it's a straight line log, it should be a power law.
Because the axis is logarithmic, a straight line and log is a power law.
Yeah,
I don't get this.
Four decades in each direction. Oh, I see. So you're saying it's
both x's are logarithmic.
X equals y to the alpha.
Right.
Graphs and log is a straight line.
Yes, this is consistent with that.
Your alpha is one.
that's
saying
the
it's 5 decades on either axis.
All right, maybe it's okay.
You're gonna have to
cut
them.
I'll just move on.
All right.
So this is one other trick that we have. So we had a probability of a root and a double probability of a subroot and of a path and of a file. And that's a very, very good indication of if this is a home page. So the probability that this is a home page of something is very low. Probability that this is a home page is quite low. In this case, it is actually. It's the home page of our workshop. I'm not sure if this is a home page. I haven't really checked what this is. And obviously, this is a home page as well. Again, some results. This is our old system without any prior. And we run that on just the content, but also on text from the anchor text that point to a web page. And that actually works really quite well. It outperforms the content of the document. So the text from anchors, from hyperlinks pointing to your page, contain very, very good content words, better than the content of the pages itself. And if I take this document length thing, then it deteriorates the content run. And actually, the anchor text gets better, but it's a bit artificial because these anchor representations, the length of those are sort of proportional to the number of links that point to a page. So I think this is more or less doing the same thing as this. It also gets about the same result here. The number of inlinks improves both things really significantly. And yeah, on this particular task, but it's a bit artificial because all of these queries were navigational queries. All the queries were please take me to the home page of and then something. And which is a significant percentage of queries, for instance, entered to Google, but not really all queries, of course. But in that case, you might as well just look at the URL. And that will give you, again, a 100% improvement. So when we did this task, I think it was in 2001, we were very quickly with this. It was very easy to make in our system because we had this language modeling approach. And this particular system came up on top of all systems. And the year after, everyone did similar stuff. And you can obviously also maybe train a vector space engine by tweaking weights or something or doing some stuff. But in this case, it was very, very obvious what to do. We just estimated the priors, we combined them, right? So one of the things that we found hard is that we came up with probability functions very easily. Ah, oh, this is nice. We should do it like this. And then you have to go into your code, and there is where all the time goes. So you have to code for a couple of days, and then do debugging for another day, and then run some experiments, and then think, let's take another probability function. And then you do another couple of days of coding, or so we built this system for cross-language search and web search. We did video search. We did all kinds of tasks, retrieval tasks. And probably if you would ask me now, if I gave you now the system, you would do these cross-language search things. And we did them in 1999. I'm not even sure anymore if it still works, because we changed so much in the system. And we might, well, if you enter a feature somewhere, you might enter a bug somewhere else, right? So lots of software engineering issues. So we had to redesign APIs and introduce new storage structures. And well, we have introduced new query structures. So we had a query language like things, like we had this structured query. So we had things like, please use this prior in the query language, just to make doing experiments more easy. Well, and often we introduce a bug somewhere else in the system. And, we never put this system out for open source, and this TNO system is sort of proprietary. But I think this is important when you do this stuff. So what do I need from document space? I thought I should answer this in this workshop, so I tried to do that. So one thing I know that these. The probability, the similarity functions, if you like, we use are not symmetric. So I've seen lots of people start out with, I'm going to the document space, and let's do the first assumption, these things are symmetric. I don't think they are.
Mm-hmm.
you might have to do some, there's some thinking, I think, there.
For the diffusion methods, they don't have to be symmetric, right?
Right.
Because it just gets turned into a weighted graph.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I noted that. And some of the talks that, when they got there, they stopped. So,
they're church schisms, and those are not discussed in public.
Like the Wesley.
Yeah.
Right, they symmetrize.
I think this is an issue, and
in a sense, maybe one is certainly more authoritative than the other. Is if one if they were very similar, one could, in a sense, if they're web pages, they would, in that sense, you want to have a direction to the
And another thing is, I did not at the end. I had quite complex probability functions, so I could also have a cross language retrieval system that uses a prior. Maybe adding all this stuff is just a linear combination of vectors in a document space, but I'm not sure. Actually, when building these systems, we never think of high dimensional spaces. We have inverted files indexes. You have a word that will give you directly a list of all the documents in which those words occur. We never actually have vectors. Also, not in the system where we started out on, where Wessel said, I need a vector product. Because when Wessel said, I need a vector product, he also meant, I need a vector product, and it better be sparse, because otherwise I'm in trouble as well. The particular, when I got from the probability measure to the vector product, I did it in a way that terms that do not match will get zero weight. They would get the logarithm of 1 plus 0, which is 0.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, what I need from a document space is that this does not have to be symmetric. And I really want to combine things. Because I'm a researcher, I want to quickly try out my stuff in a system. And one thing that we haven't discussed is documents have internal structure. And people told this before at the workshop. Documents have structure, and they meant documents have topics and like that, but I mean actually documents have structure like title and author and maybe part of speech. I might have all kinds of linguistic tools, and I really don't know how that would work in document space, but I really want to annotate my documents like that, and I want to be able to say, I look for the word can as a noun or something. I might have named entities, I want toward this word, but it should be the name of a person. For some persons, that's really important.
Are there any information retrieval systems where you can say, I want the word can as a noun in the query?
Yes, there are. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And the remaining part of the talk, which I don't really have time to do all of that, would be about that.
Okay.
But there are one of the systems that influenced us was is an enquery system developed by the University of Massachusetts, which they are currently revising that system. They call it Indri, and they also have all kinds of ways to refer to, well, markup, if you like, or.
So that's an example of a situation where the whatever the space we might be talking about is not anything you've heard yet.
Nope.
Okay. Very good. Or at least not obvious.
Yeah. So I'll go a bit quick on now. So what I need is a well-defined wellness to behavior system. So I have these priors and structured queries, and I might refer to the word can as a noun, and I want that to have that in a query language. And I really don't want. Well, it would be best if I just can type in the probability function, and the system would say, "Oh, I know how to do this," and it would just run it. That would be great. And I'm currently at the database group, so this is also a sort of a half a political statement. I want something like SQL for retrieval systems. I really want, as an application developer, you just say, please do this, I don't care how you do this. Here's a probability function, please execute this on my system. And that's what the remaining of the talk will be about. And there has been some research by, for instance, people from the University of Montreal, which they devised the so-called region algebra. And they are quite powerful. And we use that in systems that basically an XML retrieval system. So we have documents, we have lots of markup, and we can refer to all kinds of, actually we don't really have documents anymore. So we just say, give me all things marked up as documents. That would give me a document retrieval. I could also say, give me all things marked up as persons, and I would have sort of a person retrieval system. Or all titles, or whatever. Okay. Yeah, I'll just skip this. I'll just go to the example. So this is, here we just basically number all the tokens in a document string. And to be honest, this is how we started out, but we actually are not really counting these anymore because we want to add tags later. So we basically count all the words, and then you can express, well, words have a position, and also markup has a position. This one goes from 16 to 19, if you like, from 15 to 20. And these are stored, well, as relations, you could say. The slide was made for a different audience. But they are stored like this, like a section. There are sections from 1 to 23, from 8 to 22, and from 14 to 21. And this is basically also kind of an inverted file. I could say, give me all sections, and the system would go here and directly give me all sections. And the same thing we do for words, obviously. This word is starts at 3 and ends at 3. And obviously, we don't have to really store this 3, but it's here for explaining. So all of these things are regions. The words and markup is all a region with a start and an end. And we have a simple query language, which if you type banana, you get all the occurrences of the word banana. You don't get documents, you just get banana was on this position, and it has a score. In this case, the score is 1. You might type recipe, and you get whole recipes. Again, with score 1, that is just like database selection. There's some stuff we can scale that for reasons that we show later on. And then we have sort of the retrieval functionality. So there is an operator that's containing, and I can say, give me recipes containing banana. Give me, obviously, recipes containing banana. And what we wanted to have here is, well, actually the system that we made, you can plug in any similarity function, but I will assume here that we have the language models that I showed earlier. You might also say, I want ingredients that are contained by recipes. There might also be ingredients that are not contained by recipes, and I only want those. And then you could do stuff like this. Give me documents containing DB, databases, and documents containing IR, and the end would just be an intersection of document regions, and I could do this with an OR as well. And actually, I might also rephrase some of these queries. I might say, give me documents containing DB or IR, DB or IR, which would give, hopefully, exactly the same result.
So the way I would interpret the first question, the first query, was that there had to be two regions. If you could have multiple doc regions in the same document, which maybe you can, that the one containing DB could be different than the one containing IR. So if you had section containing DB and section containing IR.
So the end would be an intersection. So DB containing a doc containing DB would give me all regions, document regions containing data.
Suppose we replace doc by section.
Yeah.
Suppose my intention were that DB and IR occur in the same section.
Yeah. So the
is there a way to express that?
Yeah. So the interpretation I think is that doc containing DB is a list, and doc containing IR is a list.
This
and is the intersection.
This actually will give you documents that contain both.
Again, can we replace doc by section?
Yeah.
So you can have multiple sections in the same document.
I'm not sure what happens if sections are nested, but let's assume that sections are not nested.
Let's assume they're not nested, yeah.
So this will give me all sections. So it might give me 1 to 8 and 9 to 23.
Oh, I see. We're actually,
yeah.
This will basically assign scores to that. So suppose this one contains DB. Two times, that would be a sort of a 2 in 8. And this one does not. Maybe there's another that does have that, 24 to 30. 1 and 6 or something. And then there is another one that does this. And then I, when I do the intersection, so suppose this one, that's good. This one is for IR. Well, and this is 1 over whatever. So suppose this one, these are the ones that contain IR, then the intersection would only give me.
Yes.
And we multiply the probability.
What I was missing was that the query returns a set of regions and not a set of documents. That was my question.
Okay, yeah. Everything returns sets of regions.
Yeah, no, everything's fine.
Our whole world is regions now. That's why I call it the region model.
Okay.
There's nothing, there are no documents.
Yes,
say anymore. Everything is a region. And we made this for an XML retrieval system, which basically gets queries like this. I don't know if you know XPath. If you don't know, please try to understand this. But this is basically a path expression. So this is slash s means from the root go down till you see an article. And an article should be about something. And this is from this article go down to ATL. So I think that's article title in this case. Or go down to KEWD, which is keywords. But anyway, this will be processed like this by our system. So this basically says, give me sections containing databases, contained by articles containing titles or keywords containing book and containing review.
So does anyone come up with like a nice GUI for this? I imagine for the average person they wouldn't want to type.
No.
I mean,
and the average person does not want to type SQL as well.
Right. So I mean, it would be nice to have some kind of more intuitive graphical way of representing it for people to do. So I know people, professionals who could do this, and it's certainly not just computer scientists.
Okay.
There are
some interesting articles
too,
from people that we evaluate this in INEX, which is the initiative for evaluation of XML retrieval, which is sort of a track thing around the world. And people have sort of gone over all these queries that people made, not these, but these, and also professionals make lots of errors. Professionals here being us researchers.
Right.
But
you would definitely not want someone to write this. There is a GUI, and someone just types in the article, in the keyword field, some words. So this is basically for application developers. You make a nice GUI, and your GUI produces this, and we have some standard software tools, and those standard software tools, that's sort of our research project. So we will give you, not now, but at some point, we'll give you a tool that does this very quickly.
You need to hide the ugliness.
You need to get to your punchline.
Right. And it's not really coming. Right, very nice. We can do this very quickly and nice. So the punchline is actually maybe this. So what does this have to do with language models? So one thing that we saw was this, right? And this is mainly the punchline. So I showed you this, and I said I really want my system to do this. Well, I could write this out. So for a two-word query, this would basically say, compute the probability of the word DB in a document, and compute the probability of T of IR in a document, and multiply those. And hey, that looks very similar to what we've done here. And in fact, and you could say, okay, but this is by design, right? You've just inserted that. But I think, this is a very complex query, and it looks very ugly. I agree. This is this smoothing thing. So now I do DB and IR, and I smooth with the, no, what, is this right? No. Actually, this was not right. Here's the collection. This is collection. I made that explicit here. So this is the smoothing thing. And I actually could specify the whole smoothing operation. I would never do that internally in the system. Physically, I would just store pre-computed weight somewhere. But I actually could specify this. And I don't have any time anymore, but you can sort of see this, right? So this or corresponds to this plus. And there's actually, if you see this, you don't know what you want to retrieve. And you can specify that by saying, our documents contained by this big expression. And you have to trust me on this because I don't have any time anymore. So, and we've done that for video retrieval. And the cross-language stuff I showed you, we can also specify like this.
And so you're saying that this thing is the same model as the previous story?
This system can do all of the stuff that we did before. And in that sense, for research, it's not very nice because while making the system, I cannot really publish a lot over this. But once we have this, as I said, when we did our research before, we are constantly coding and making new things. And one of the things, I think, if we have something like this, we have a very, very powerful thing, which you can just declaratively specify.
But in some sense, the document model that you gave before is a sub-model or the same model as this region idea. It looks like it's a different story.
Yeah.
You're suggesting it's the same story.
Yeah. So for instance, did not show that we did, for video dream, we have shots, and shots are contained in videos, and shots might also be contained in a story. Mm-hmm. So we did a linear interpolation of language models of all of these things. And once you have these regions of shots and stories and videos and collections, you can just specify that as a region query. So take the shot and take the region, glue them, or take the union of that, stuff like that. I've presented it. Most people say, well, very nice, Jude, but it's not very. But for us, this was really a sort of an insight. So that like, oh my God, we can. Because we started out making this XML retrieval system, and only later we found out, hey, we can do all of this stuff we did before as region queries. And that sort of was an insight that, and maybe that's what I want from a document space.
Actually,
I really
like that. I rather like that description. I mean, I don't know what SQL and all that stuff is, but we sort of think. A number of us think of documents as writ large, right? It's okay, so little pathology pixels are documents as well, and things like that. And we just say that in the vector space engine. How's that? In vector space engines, that might be true, but this is maybe the first example of how explicit of documents being writ large explicitly. Yeah. So
yeah.
I think that was a valuable little coincidence.
Okay, thank you. Two more slides this is sort of if you really think it's a coincidence, and one thing that, let's get this, but probability functions are not really, so these probability functions say, if you have a document, then this is the probability, and these region queries just say, get me a bunch of regions and process them. So it's really like, if you know a little bit of relational algebra for relational databases, then those algebras are doing the same thing, like, bulk processing things. And here's some stuff you might read, and that will go on the web page. And this is the team that does this. So this is us. It's Henning Rode and Vojkan Mihalovic. They're two PhD students in Twente. This is Arjen de Vries, who is at CWI. And Arjen and I wrote the proposal for building this system. And this is Georgina Ramirez at CWI.